Hello, and welcome to episode 9 of season 2 of Ludo Narrative Dissidence. In this episode, we're going to be talking about initiative systems in role-playing games. And with me, as always, are my good friends and co-hosts, Greg Stolze and James Wallace. Hello to you both.
Hey. Hello.
So yeah, let's roll off to see who gets to talk first now. If you're not familiar with the term, initiative determined is usually a system in a role-playing game to determine who acts and when they can act. So it's a way to control spotlighting, and it also ties into a related mechanic or system called the action economy, where, you know, characters, how many times can a character act in a given amount of time, which helps determine spotlight and often efficiency or power in combat or conflicts. It is
right.
Yeah, there's a lot of different ways of doing it, and we're going to talk about a lot of them. So,
and all right, I will throw out the heretical I will stake out the possibly heretical position that initiative doesn't always matter that much. And now I will caveat that shocking hot take by saying, if your game is really combat simulationist, then okay, yes, you may, even then, it may not matter that much. But if your game is loosey-goosey, left-wing improvisational, you may just get away with, like, okay, what are you doing? What are you doing now? Okay, then this guy does some stuff. Okay, now how about you? Now this other guy. That is how I've been doing it with Dying Breath. I'm playtesting that now, where it is player-facing, and all the antagonist's actions in planned combats are scripted. So it's like, okay, on the first phase, they do this, and on the second phase, they do that, and on the third phase, if they're still awake, they do this. And, you know, it forks off a little bit, but so far, it's worked just fine, and no one has complained about it. And does it often matter whether character A acts before character B if they're on the same side? Now, I can see the cases where this matters a lot is, all right, if we are going to be doing some kind of superhero game where there are, like, combos, where it's like, okay, I'm going to power up Ross's character, I'm going to buff him so that when he hits, it's like 5 hits, then timing matters because I got to go first. But for the most part, I'm like, if I want to do that kind of thing, I can play a computer game. Does having a scientifically metered economy of action play to the particular strengths of tabletop role playing? And I don't know that they do, but I can be persuaded.
Okay, I'm going to jump in at this point with a kind of a counterpoint to Greg's, which is, I think initiative systems are really important if you have a game that is based very much on combat or contested actions, but I think the vast majority that have been implemented so far suck. I think they're really bad because I think they don't simulate anything, and they're not narrative. They sit somewhere in between. Because, like combat systems, they are one of the great hangovers from war games.
Yep.
Fundamentally, war games are where initiative systems originated, and we're still using very, very similar systems. And for all the randomness that most of them bring in, and all the supposed fairness, we might as well do what games have been doing since the dawn of time, and just passing play to the person on our left. It does make a difference in some games. In Paranoia, when we were rebooting Paranoia a few years ago, we had a lot of arguments about whether we needed an initiative system. And I take Greg's point absolutely about, you could just have all the players on one team go and then all the NPCs go. But this is Paranoia, where there's a good chance that the players on one team will be trying to kill each other.
The SYN factor.
Yes.
The screw your neighbor factor.
Yeah. Well, if we're talking about acronyms, what we came up with was a system we called Dynamo, which stood for, let me get this right, Dynamic Yet Narrative Action Melee Combat Order. No. Action Melee Order. I love a good acronym. And
so close to Dynamco.
And anyway, but that's a bluffing system, basically, because our edition of Paranoia had cards, had action cards for special abilities, and everyone put one face down in front of them, and they all had number values as well. And the GM then counted down. First of all, in rounds were 5 seconds, but that was five seconds of real time. So the GM counted down 5 seconds. If you didn't have a card that face down in front of you, you didn't go that turn.
Right.
The cards were valued 1 to 10, and the card went, and 10 is highest. So GM would say, anyone got 10, anyone got 9, anyone got 8. And players can just say, I've got a 9, and they can lie. And the GM has to take them at face value, but the other players can go, you're lying, turn over your card. And if they are right, they get to go. So it's a bluff system with penalties, and it's very paranoia, and it's too complicated. Sure. I mean, I loved it. It worked quite well once or twice in playtest, and then the third time you come to it, it's like, do we have to do this? And so we included a simplified system as well, which sucked, because it's an initiative system and they do suck. But it's really important to know who goes first, because if you have 154 warbots waiting on your command, and I have a single shot gun and I go first, odds are I win. And it's all about who goes what in what order, not who's got the bigger gun or who's got the most attributes or abilities.
What this has put me in mind of is superhero games and the speedster problem, right?
Yeah.
Where it's like, okay, I'm going to play a speedster, which means A, that I get to do 10 things for everything you do, and my 10 things always happen before your 10 things because I'm moving so much faster. And I can see how I did Wild Talents, which was a very combat simulationist, you know, okay, now you move, now he goes, now this happens, and if there's a tie, it's resolved with it. And so I am wondering, I'm like, is there a way to do this in a much more simple narrative way where it still has that cool superhero stuff vibe? And I have not resolved in my mind just how to do that, how to make the major shift of, oh yeah, well, here's how you would take a setting for Wild Talents and just make it a narrative hand wavy thing that isn't completely magical tea party.
Yeah, initiative systems are one of these things that seem deceptive, that seem very simple at first, but that's very deceptive. In order to do it well, like, it's very hard to design one. But going back to James's point about the wargaming, the reason I even included this in the original list of topics for consideration for voting in season two is because previously we did an episode on RPPR talking about wargame initiative systems, because it was such in wargames, which are competitive, not collaborative, initiative matters so much more. So like the big example, the big boy in the block is like Warhammer 40K. But we'd also played a different system called Conflict 47, which is based on the bolt action system. And in Warhammer, it's a much simpler system. You roll off, highest person goes first, and then they move their entire army, move all their units, and which is a huge advantage because you can shoot or damage or weaken or even eliminate enemy units or characters or whatever, or achieve objectives before they can do anything. Sometimes there's a way to interrupt or react or whatever, but that's, you know, very faction specific. But in bolt action, let's say you have 10 units on your army and your opponent has 8 units. You would each get D6s of different color, but being the same size, so they feel the same. So you put in 10, you know, red dice, and he put in 8 blue dice. Then you put them in a bag and then blind draw them. And whenever you drew a die of your color, you got to activate one unit. And if you activated an officer, they could chain activate a second unit nearby. But like, so it was done per unit, and it was randomly determined which ones went first. So that made it a lot more interesting and a lot more strategic about who, like, oh, that powerful unit already activated, I don't have to worry about it for the rest of the turn, so I can...
Okay,
I can,
so you can only activate each unit one time.
There are a couple of units that had specific abilities that allow them to activate more than once, but like even then it was random if they could actually activate that.
Right, so it's the default. Yeah. Well, I mean, okay, in my mind, an initiative system, there is the bone stand, the bone simple standard initiative system is you have an initiative score, you go on that. Okay. And that's
like Delta Green. Like
that's extremely predictable and it's solid and everyone knows where they stand. But the problem with that is that the person who acts first doesn't get to react to what anyone else does. So it's like, I take my first shot and then everyone's like, oh, he's not dodging. Boom, 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 boom.
Really no problem.
You can set it up so that, you know, the person with the best initiative declares last and acts first, which gives good initiative a tremendous advantage because it's like, oh, hey, no one's opted to attack me, so I am not going to dodge. I am going to take a full attack where I'm just hanging out outside of cover because nobody declared an attack on me. Ha ha. And you know, so it is, that's an easy, well, I'm not going to say easy. I'm going to say straightforward, but you got to be really finicky and consistent about it. And it runs the risk of privileging the guy with high initiative. So the second, the layer of complexity inward is, I would call it like a sort of single hung randomness where it's like, okay, the players all, you have an initiative score, but you're also going to roll and add dice to that. And then a double hung randomness would be, okay, and also the enemies all have an initiative score and they all have to roll against it. And the problem with that is that it becomes an absolute handling time nightmare for the GM if they want to do something other than, oh, well, you are squaring off against yet another big boss. If you want to do a combat of, you know, 10 gritty little goblins, it's like, okay, goblin number one, ka-thunk, clunk, goblin number two, ka-thunk, ka-thunk. Okay, yeah, you can go get some Cokes, Jerry. I'm going to be doing initiative for the goblins for a little bit.
Yeah,
and then there's the system that all the goblins would have exactly the same initiative, and that doesn't work either. That's not satisfying, and it just, and suddenly you've got this mass of goblins all acting as one. It doesn't feel dynamic. It just, it feels like, you know, it's the D&D problem of you know, essentially your numbers battling numbers rather than.
If only there was some kind of extremely fast math handling device that could also depict these units. So I'm like, yeah, you know, if I want to play something that feels like a computer game, I'll play a computer game because it will be a lot faster.
Yeah, and this is, I mean, I talked briefly about war games. Character versus character war games were a relatively new innovation at the time role-playing games came along. One of the first, I don't believe it was the first, but one of the first was SPI Sniper, which was early 70s, which was basically man versus man, I think originally in World War II. And they later, they redeveloped it in the 80s and in fact did what is basically an Aliens as a grid war game. But that had, that was unit versus unit as opposed to squad against squad or battalion against battalion or the standard fare of war games. And the way Sniper solved it was simultaneous movement in the same way that Diplomacy, the board game, had in the, I'm going to get this wrong, late 50s or early 60s, where everyone, right, essentially you decide your action and then everyone declares simultaneously, which strategically is great if what you're looking for is a strategic experience. But most role-playing games, the players would quite like a strategic experience, but in no way does it feel like the cut and thrust of actual combat. Most role-playing game systems are nothing like any actual form of combat. They can be fun, but they are, the one thing they're not is simulationist. Simply because you have multiple seconds to think about what you're doing, whereas in actual combat, it is split second and instinct. And anyone who's ever been in a combat, and thank God I've been in very few, You don't have time to think. You're just acting really the first thing that comes to mind, unless you're at a very high level and have been trained in this stuff.
I would say unless you are at a meaningfully higher level than the person you're fighting.
Oh, yeah, it's all relative. Yes. Yeah.
It's, you know, if they're really slow and sucky and have like three moves, then you only really need to have like five. Mm-hmm. Okay. What we want from combat, from combat rules in our games then, is we want it to be much, much, much slower than an actual contest, which would be just random wildness that you can barely remember later. Mm-hmm. But we also want it to retain some of the feeling of that wild, out of control, too fast to think or react. Yes. And people have different tastes, and some people are like, yeah, I want my combat to really feel crazy and wild and stupid and impulsive and chaotic and out of control. And other people are like, no, I want this to be an elegant chess match between my move, his counter move, and the counter move that I prepared waiting for him to act. And so it's, yeah. Where does initiative fit into all this?
The point I was coming around to is that at the time D&D came along, this was not a solved problem. This was not something that war games had been doing initiative as a very simple thing for a while, but they had not solved the problem. And an initiative system, you know, a battlefield combat simulating an entire, you know, mass combat works very differently, whether strategically or in terms of the narrative that's going on in your head, than second by second melee rounds. I think what most people want is a kind of cinematic combat. They want, want to see the details. You want to know who's got the upper hand, who's got the lower hand, where you can follow what's going on. And initiative is a part of that. Who's going to go first? You know, the moment where they pause and stare into each other's eyes, and then one of them lunges and the other one parries or doesn't.
In another world, you and I could have been friends. We are very much alike. Yeah. But in this one, to the death. That kind of thing. Yeah, that's what tabletop role-playing games are good at. That's what you don't get in computer games, is the chance to spout off hackneyed but super fun dialogue.
Yeah, I mean, that's, and comics as well do that. I'm forgetting the word from the Incredibles. What do you call it? Not expositing. Monologuing. Just monologuing and just talking during combat, because comics give you the space to do that. But there is a sense within some games, at least, that what you should be doing is just trying to knock hit points off each other. And I think hit points, you know, that's a whole other subject. And the, simplification of combat into basically knocking down each other's numbers. Greg, I think you're completely right. I think computer games do this so much better because they can do it in real time. But at the same time, they usually default to the hit point model, which is just, you know, it works as a game, but it does not feel real in any interesting sense. And it's not interestingly strategic either. You're just knocking down numbers. You can't
what's my best attack? I should use my best attack. There isn't even, it's not even Rochambeau sometimes.
Is there a middle ground? Well, I have two questions. Is there a middle ground between the real-time stuff that computer games do really well and the bookkeeping that computer games do really well and the sense of immersion that a good role-playing game system will produce? And my second question, which is more of a kind of almost a bullet point, has any game ever attempted to do real-time combat? Because there's real-time card games out there. There was James Ernest's Falling, where it's a card game where you're all falling and basically the last player to hit whose character hits the ground wins. And there's Blink, which was, I can't remember where it came from originally, I think Out of the Box published it and sold it to Mattel, and then I think the rights went somewhere else. I think it might be a Kinexia game, and it's an abstract, but it plays in real time. And then and traditional card games like Racing Demon, there are games where it's about how quickly you can play the game. Has any role-playing game picked that up? Because I think if you wanted to do a kind of a fast, messy, unstructured combat, that could be really interesting and really fun for the right genre.
Well, James, there's actually an entire category of this. They're called live-action role-playing games.
Oh, okay.
And I assure you, there are actually quite a few games of them with all kinds of combat systems, some more dynamic than others.
I've been hit by tennis balls thrown by people shouting, double, double, double. Yep. I know all of these. I've been there from not the beginning, but the early days, at least.
What this reminds me of is a card game I played with Martha and her roommates called Pounce back mm-hmm. in college. And it was a sort of competitive, it was like solitaire, but you could play your cards on anyone's setup. Mm-hmm. And so you needed to be able to analyze really fast. And it was very, very much a skill-based game. And they were very, very much better than me. So I'm trying to still figure this out. And they're like, boom, 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 boom. They are basically playing against each other while I lag behind to sweep up last place. And so I did not have a lot of fun. And this is a problem with system mastery games, mm-hmm. where what do you do with the person who hasn't mastered the system? Do they just have to suck it? And in some role-playing games, I'm willing to say, yeah, you know, if you didn't do the homework to make your character super optimized for this game where half the fun is super optimized characters, mm-hmm. man, you played yourself.
Yeah.
But there are other games where I'm like, no, the point of this is not system mastery. The point of this is some evocation of emotion. And in mm-hmm. that case, nothing is going to chill out your evocation of emotion faster than, oh, well, you know, I don't understand what order things happen in or why it's important that Fred goes before Judy.
No, a lot of these, at its basic, an initiative system is a way to divide spotlight time during, you know, an important intense scene, i.e. conflicts, usually combat, in a way that is, you know, makes the game better in some way for what it's trying to do. Like, you know, Greg, you know, Lancer is a game of optimization. Like, you right. can be a better mech pilot than others with the right combos and the right skills. But on the other hand, a game like, Apocalypse World, it doesn't even have an initiative system because everything is, it's a player-facing game. Players initiate all the roles, and it's just handled one role at a time. So there's not like...
Well, moreover, yeah. it's yeah. abstracted out. Mm-hmm. It's, you know... In D&D, or a lot of combat simulationist games, like Rain, I mean, if you want to see my take on a complicated initiative system for Battlefield emulation, bada boom, there's Rain, where it's like, okay, so now all the, you know, did anyone get any triples? Okay, you got threes, you got three tens, you go before me with my three fives, okay, your effect takes place before I can act, and where it's very meaningful, yeah. and where it's all in, I tried hard to integrate it too, where it's like, okay, yes, if you're trying to do two things in one combat, you are in one action, you can do that, but it's probably going to impact your timing in a real meaningful way. And mm-hmm. a lot of the really kick-ass moves, it's like, okay, you have to do X first and then Y second. So mm-hmm. the effect is really big, but you might not get it. You might not get the timing you want.
You're talking about, of course, about the One Roll Engine, which mm-hmm. Wild Talons and also Monsters and other childish things uses. Now, I've run campaigns in both systems, and I can remember one particular thing in a Wild Talents campaign where the group of player character superheroes got all their NPC allies and were like, we're going to go to we found out the villain's lair, and we're going to go there and kick all of their asses. Just have a big knockdown, drag out, you know, just a big, big fight.
Battle, you know? Royale.
Yes. So initiative was actually a major part of this because, as you mentioned, you declare, then you roll, and then the widest roll goes first, and then the next highest roll, and then the next highest roll. So I had to write down everyone's actions in order of them doing that. And then everyone rolled dice, and then I asked them what their dice were, and then I wrote all that down, and then I had to look, and then I had to roll for all the NPCs, and then I had to look, see who's had the highest width. Okay, this person's going to go first. All right, this happens, now this happens. So, like, just initiative was a significant portion of the combat, and it made a lot of difference. And
right.
I remember feedback from a book I wrote for Monsters and Other Childish Things, where one of the NPC antagonists was modeled on a Western gunfighter. It was like a Western painting come to life. And it was, you know, and so I was like, well, obviously he's fast. So I'm just going to give him this ability to let him act first. He's going to have like basically plus five width on initiative counts only. Mm-hmm. So the other thing about the one roll engine is if you get hit before you act, you lose dice on your set. So you could actually not even go because someone hit you and interrupted your action. And so I got I did get feedback from that book saying that gunslinger was too powerful because he just kept interrupting the player's actions. He just wouldn't let them do anything. So the initiative system was letting a character, I didn't mean to be a boss, but just absolutely dominating everyone because he could just like just stun like them essentially.
I was developing Feng Shui, I figured out that, if you give a mook really, really high action values, then suddenly they get really scary, partially because they act really fast.
Mm-hmm.
And it sort of disrupted the mook system a little bit. What I'm thinking of as... It wasn't a role-playing game, but a board game. Does anyone remember Robo Rally?
Oh, yeah.
I bet James does. And course, there, yeah.
I was talking to Peter Atkinson about it just the other day. you know me. Never miss a name drop where I can.
Yeah, that's going to be the drinking game. Is drink when James drops a name or talks about balancing columns, and finish your cup when Greg goes off on the future conditional tense. We need one for Ross. It's like drink when Ross tries to drag them back from the brink.
Meanwhile, back on the topic at hand. Yeah,
But the deal with Robo Rally to get dragged back is that you would set up a sequence that you were then locked into, and you would issue a series of commands to your robot that would trundle across the board doing it, but you could not plan for what the other robots were going to do. And oftentimes there were effects that would knock a card out of your thing, out of your sequence. And now it's like, yes, I told it to walk forward three steps, turn left, walk forward two steps, turn right, walk forward two steps. And the turn left got knocked out. So now it is just walking straight into this wall that it was supposed to turn around. And it's stuck. And I'm thinking you could do something like that. It's an interesting initiative system. And it's like, okay, we're going to program everything out, and the GM's going to program everything out, and then we just like play it out in order and see the unexpected wildness that not knowing each other's actions gives us.
That actual footnote, that. The first time I encountered that is a card game called Nuclear War, which Flying Buffalo, home of Tunnels and Trolls,
published. Oh, yeah.
This sounds familiar, but I don't know if I ever played it.
I think I have, yeah.
You lay out a sequence of cards, which are the actions that you will be taking in two turns' time. You put down to, I think it's two cards, and then on your turn, you turn over the card that you put down two rounds previously, which means that you can still be engaging in a massive propaganda war while everyone else is nuking the shit out of each other. It's not a great tactical game, but it is
nerve-wracking.
Oh, it's stupid fun. It's surprising. It's a funny game. It's not like nuclear poker, which is heartrending. Nuclear war is black humor at its finest. It is a very, very fine. It was a propaganda game, basically, in the 60s.
What is nuclear poker?
Nuclear poker is a similar single deck card game about basically brinkmanship between nuclear powers, which would take long. It's really good. Nuclear poker is really good, and we should. We should do a video live play of games that we have talked about, you know, at some point. Just pull stuff. I should do one of these sitting up in my it's the spare bedroom, actually. I refer to it as my games library. But yeah, just pulling stuff off the shelf, going, yeah, and this, and you know, look at all this. Mm-hmm. Look and Colin Balance. But yeah, it's so again, that's an old mechanic, and I think for the right game could work really well, that idea. And you were talking about doing combos in superhero games, Greg.
Right.
You've got to set stuff up. You've got to kind of stage stuff and make sure that everyone's going to get stuff in the right order and something can go wrong. That could work really well. But again, my core problem with a lot of this is it's taking what ought to be part of the narrative flow of a good role-playing game, and I am a narrativist, and I do not apologize for that, and turning it essentially into not exactly a board game because there is no board, but it becomes a tactical game that almost feels separate from the role-playing game.
Yeah, but people love their tactical games.
People do. And, you know, we talked about Lancer, and you guys loved Lancer, and I didn't. But, you know, Lancer is a role-playing game built around its combat system, fundamentally. Yeah. The whole game is big robots slugging the crap out of each other, and it works on that level brilliantly. People do really, really like that. And, you know, even a combat system as simplistic as early versions of D&D or AD&D, where it was just you were rolling a D6 for initiative. I don't think there was even any attribute adds, any stat adds. I think it was just D6 for initiative, or it could have been D10. It's been a while. And then D20 to hit, plus, you know, plus a few adds, and then rolling for damage. And it really was as simple as that. And we were satisfied with that for hours and hours. There is something that works about role-playing game combat, despite the fact that, mechanically speaking, it's often simplistic and quite horrible and feels completely at odds with the rest of the experience. But then, as I was saying, combat does feel at odds with real life, whether it's in a movie, because, you know, you go into a combat sequence, the editing style will change, the music tempo will change, everything changes. You do feel like you're in a separate kind of bubble while the combat is going on. And I think possibly that's why role-playing game combat does work, but at the same time, it doesn't excuse it being as long and as cumbersome as it often is.
I think, James, to your point, I think one of the reasons why role-playing, you know, initiative and combat works, even though the system, as you mentioned, could use some improvement, I think it's because of the spotlighting, right? Because I think it's very common in role-playing groups that some players get more spotlight time in the narrative sections than others. You know, the talker, the more experienced player, the person who, you know, is going to obsess about their one thing and do that. And there's going to be some players who are going to recess more, get less spotlight time, right? It's never going to be perfectly evenly divided.
I will argue that that's okay, that there is a subset of players who don't want as much spotlight time, who are happy just being... These are taciturn people who happen to want to play story games with their friends.
Sure. But like, I mean, not always, but like the thing about combat is that everyone gets to act, you know, usually, unless something specifically has happened to your character. They're knocked out or, you know, paralyzed or whatever. So like everyone gets a turn in spotlight. Everyone does something to contribute. And so I think that's one of the reasons why it's stuck around, is it's a way to ensure that at least everyone gets some spotlight time, because we've all played in games where, you know, if there wasn't combat, there would be a player who would just sit there the entire time and do nothing because somebody the GM was not, you know, not doing their job of, you know, making sure everybody was having fun or doing spotlight, but like, it's something.
Okay. Well, something that has occurred to me on occasion, I think about Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, right? Mm-hmm. And a very fight-intensive movie. And I think about the scene where the two women are fighting in the dojo, right? With you know, all where the where what's her name from Everywhere All at Once,
Michelle Yeoh.
Where Michelle Yeoh keeps trying to pick up the weapon that will work, trying to figure, you know, has to try all these different weapons. And I'm like, this is almost all blocking. And it's a really cool fight scene where everyone just blocks all the time. And in role-playing games, blocking is the most boring thing you can do. It's usually a bullshit option. And it's usually a bad option or a suboptimal option by design, because combats that are all, I block, I dodge, I block, last forever and drag out, and you get the 20 minutes of fun spread out over 4 hours problem. So can initiative be used to address that? When James was talking about, you know, wanting really fast, just like bap, bap, bap initiative, to me, yeah, I think cards is the way to do that. Dice just have an innate handling time, and I love them, and they are wild and chaotic. But if you want to have it have that snap of action, reaction, react, react, you're going to be doing cards throwing down. And the way you can make that function is just like, oh, yeah, you know, you only have so many cards. Okay. You know, here's the calm phase of combat where you get your cards ready and see what five you've drawn. And now we're all just going to bap, 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 and throw them down and see what happens. And then we'll resolve that. If you did it in order, like this, I'm free associating here, but okay. So you have something where you would need to have to know whose card it was. So they'd have different colored backs and, you know, different particular actions. And so you'd all throw them down in order, and then you'd square them up, and the GM would have to interpret it, you know, turning it over in order and saying, okay, so this happens, this happens, this happens, this happens, and now Jerry's character's dead.
No.
I feel like there's something there that could work really excitingly and interestingly, but that it's very, very different from what most, what's cool about most role-playing game combat. And I think part of what's really cool about most role-playing game combat is the descriptions. Because if it is just, you know, I hit for 5 hit points of damage, yeah, it does become very dry and mathematical quickly. But that when you are describing, you know, it's like when someone rolls that thing where they miss by 1 point and you're like, oh, yeah, you reach out and you just, you can feel the back of his coat brush your fingers, but you can't grab him.
Yeah.
No. That's what gaming does well and video games do poorly.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, I mean, it's worth saying there's no one size fits all solution for this. Every game is trying to create a different feel. It's trying to emulate a different genre of fiction. But we were talking about cards and something was niggling in my mind. And this is a game I've talked about previously. Poorly Kids, Lace and Steel from the late 80s. A game that set in, it's basically, it's the Three Musketeers with centaurs and satyrs and fairies. And it's berserk fun. It is ridiculously cheap on drive-through. If you haven't bought it already, go and buy it. But it uses a card deck system for its two combat systems, and it has two. One is for rapier fencing, because it's the Three Musketeers, and the other is for duels of wit and repartee, which uses exactly the same system, which is great. But the system it uses there is a kind of a sword fencing one, where it's not just bash, 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 you know, I try and hit you and then you try and hit me. It's like, no, I am pressing my attack and you are defending until you can play a card where you turn my attack and now you are attacking, bash, 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 and I am defending. Mm. And it's got that back and forth in the same, like breaking a serve in tennis. And it really feels like a sword fight. It really captures that, and it is fast and dynamic. It's a little bit too numerical, but this was the late 80s. It gets a lead for that.
And this is cards.
This is cards. And it feels like, yeah, you have these resources and what, you know, your timing, it's not real time, it's not that kind of thing. But at what point do you go in with the heavy attack? At what point, knowing that you know, it's easier to parry that one. But have you drained your opponent? Have you forced them down to their last good card? It's great. It is not one of the great combat games, but it's not meant to be a standalone game. It recognizes that it's a subset of the greater role-playing experience. You don't play the game in order to have combat, but when combat comes up, it feels different. It feels very alive on the table. And it's, I played a fantastic, many, many years ago, fantastic campaign of Ace and Steel. I still think it's the best Three Musketeers-esque game out there.
Dang. I will, you have mentioned it before. I do remember it. I can't remember if I actually bought it.
I was getting it confused with another one you were talking about that was some massive multiplayer thing that they ran at conventions.
That's En Garde, yeah.
How could I have gotten those confused?
En Garde does not have, it's basically, that's a simultaneous action game. Everyone puts in their actions and then they're all resolved simultaneously. But then your actions are basically, what are you doing this week? There's no detail in it.
Okay.
But you can challenge someone to a duel. And I've only ever played it being computer moderated in the way it was played a lot by mail over post, you know, with the GM literally hundreds of miles away. Or it was played at big conventions with literally 50 or 100 people playing simultaneously. And the computer would work out the results of your duel, so there was no sense of actual involvement there. I can't remember if the game itself has a combat system. But again, we're talking mid-70s.
All right.
It's unlikely to be a good one.
Well, here, let me throw out some more random Stolze-esque woo thought. All right, so let's imagine an initiative system that's highly, highly narrative, all right? And you will have some kind of, I cannot see in the fog of my brain what the method by which we choose our initiative order, but the person who is first in initiative order gets the advantage of sort of staging the conflict, and we go in turns expanding on or altering it. And what you want, the winner of, you know, the person who rolls best or has the best stack up of whatever we're using to determine who's coolest, is the person who gets to go last and have the final say. So how would you work that? I mean, you would have to put, you'd have to put rails around it where it's like, you can't just, you know, at the end say, and then I behead all the other combatants. You know, it needs to be like, you know, okay, the role determines that Ross is going to go first and James is going to go second and Greg's going to go third and that two of the enemy are going to die. So describe that. And you guys would then get to say, oh, well, you know, my character kills the basilisk by putting it into, by waving a mirror in its face. And then James is like, well, my character kills the Minotaur by just walking up to it and punching it right between the eyes. And then I'm like, okay. And so that's the two characters dead. And now I get to add in some other thing that'll make things interesting. Which could be that, oh, yeah, while you guys are fighting them, mine finds the magic sword that they had hidden. I don't know. I feel like this could work somehow. And I feel like it could either be that the mathematicalness of constraining, the mathematics that constrain what you can narrate in could be very complicated or very simple. And that the idea of narrative position as a narrative currency. I'm like, this feels like it has some legs, actually.
You know, you could sort of like, going back to the bolt action system, It's a bag building thing, right? You take a bag and you add in random components. So you could have different, give players each a certain number of poker chips of different colors. And so when you're building the encounter, you put in a poker, red poker chip to represent like, you know, a result, or a yellow one represents a setting thing or location or like a stake, you know? And so when you draw them out, then, somehow each player takes turns resolving what that is. I don't know.
Oh, and I'd steal a move. If we were going to do it that way, I'd steal a move from Love Letter, and it's like, draw two, play one, throw the other back in the bag.
Okay. Yeah. That's good. Yeah. But a lot of James, you know, go back to what James was saying about, what initiative system work. I'm thinking more about the initiative list systems out there, in particular, like Apocalypse World / Powered by the Apocalypse and Red Markets, because they're both player facing. And basically time is frozen until a player initiates an action and does something. And so during a fight scene in Red Markets, what I would do is like, all right, player one is shooting at the zombies. Player two... So, all right, we'll resolve that. So, meanwhile, while that player is shooting, what are you doing? All right, make a roll. All right, what are you doing? And so every bad guy only acts as a reaction to what the players are doing. It's okay, well, in Red Markets, you get an offensive action and a defensive action, a tactic and a twitch. And you can give up your defensive action to full attack or do something else. So, when you shoot, then you also have to make a twitch not to be shot. But in Apocalypse World, you make one roll and you usually inflict damage and receive damage in the same roll, unless you roll really well or roll really poorly, in which case you take damage and don't inflict any. So I think maybe something like that is where everything is frozen in time until a player acts like that. And a player says, I'm doing this, because they're the main characters, right? Maybe that's how it should be. And the other characters only exist in relation to the PCs. Lancer actually uses I re-looked it up. It's a very simple initiative system. It's like a player goes, then a bad guy goes, then a player goes, and then a bad guy goes. And then there's abilities that interrupt that. But like, that's it. Like, it's I go, you go, you know.
Okay. And, so what happens if you have five bad guys and two players? It's like player goes, bad guy goes, player goes, bad guy goes, then three bad guys act.
Yep. Yeah. You shouldn't be outnumbered. Okay. You should probably kill those bad guys first. Even the numbers out. Yeah, maybe you shouldn't be attacking larger numbers. Maybe that's a bad idea. You have a choice. Yeah.
But again, that's kind of based on the extrapolation of time into combat rounds and combat turns and stuff like that, and saying, okay, everybody has to act within one round. And one of the things that computer games do much better is simply going, well, everyone goes at more or less the same time, but an action will take a certain amount of time to do, and therefore, you will go every...
How many frames?
Exactly.
Oh, Feng Shui does that.
Okay. Because there are a bunch, and the simpler version of this is action points or movement points, that you get a certain number of points to use per round, and, moving a bit will usually take, in war games, and I was talking about Sniper earlier on, if you're Googling it, it's Sniper with an exclamation mark at the end. I think moving costs, 1 point to move one hexagon, standing up to throw a grenade was 5, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. This is the early 70s. This is pre-role-playing games. Board games pick up this in a really big way in the mid to late 90s with the work of Wolfgang Kramer and games like Tikal. He did a trilogy of games, Tikal, Java, and Mexica, known as the Masks Trilogy. Very influential action point based games, for the players having a certain number of actions that they can perform each turn. And I think that was really the point that role playing combat started to take a notice of this thing as well as a possibility. Computer games do it really well with the time influence in there. Adding time in, I think, for most tabletop is going to make that too complicated, unless what you're looking for is a really, really grainy, granular, detailed kind of experience. But simply giving players a certain amount of actions each turn, with a simple knowledge that a simple action is going to happen really quickly. And again, this is what we did with the cards in Paranoia. The high value cards, which you use for initiative, are the things that will happen earlier in the round. It can be extrapolated using things like cards in a way that makes it fast and intuitive to deal with. I am increasingly aware, and I can't remember if I've said this on the podcast. Yes, I have long COVID and it's affected my memory. And what that means is, in very real terms, I can't deal with as complicated games as I used to.
Yes.
I used to deal very easily with games. If you follow Board Game Geek, games with a weight of 3.2 or 3.3, my comfort zone now is about 2.5. So there's I can actually measure the level of cognitive decline I'm going through. Whether it's permanent or not, I don't know. That's a discussion for another time and possibly a completely different podcast. But what it's
does disturbing, mean, James.
Yeah, yeah, it really is. It's one of the reasons I'm not with Asmodee anymore. But I've lost my thread now. To go back to it, I can't deal with combat systems as complicated as I used to. What I'm looking for, I've always enjoyed elegant and well put together systems, but now
where you get the emergent complexity instead of the imposed complexity.
Exactly. Yes, I want the complexity to come out in the way I'm thinking about what I can do, not how I have to do it within the constraints of the rules. So much as I would love to put together a combat system that uses time factors and stuff, first of all, it's too simulationist for my tastes, and I think yeah, unnecessarily sure. simulationist. And secondly, I think a lot of role players are not looking for that level of detail. We would bounce off it in the same way that a couple of episodes ago, or the last episode, again, I'm blanking on this, I bounced off Eclipse Phase.
Sure.
You know, and it's 9-phase combat system. It's just like, no, I'm not going there. I remember there's a 9-phase combat system. I cannot remember any of those phases.
Set the granularity level to gravel. I want this so crunchy, I break my teeth.
Yeah, maybe one day a backer will pay us to or curate an episode on Phoenix Command, and then we can all suffer.
I was going for. I thought you were going to say Phoenix Command. I'm very glad that you did. I'm glad that still the. I was going to. Is it the high watermark or the low watermark for game mechanical complexity in games?
But it can be both, you know, in different ways. It all depends on your point of view. Like
some people really dug it.
I
don't think there were many of them, but
windage and like having your shot affected by what angle of the hill or incline you're standing on come into factor of your shooting accuracy is something to be marveled at, even if it's
You know, I'm glad there are people out there who enjoy that kind of thing. I'm glad I don't game with any of them regularly.
To explain the feng shui shot clock system, everyone rolls and has stats to determine how many, you know, points of shots basically they have in a combat round. And we'll just say like 50. And so 50 is the highest number. So the character with 50 does something. We'll say, you know, attack a bad guy, and that takes 10 points off. And then the next person has 45, and so they would act, and that say that takes them 6 to do their action. So then we go down so that would be 40 and 39, reducing their scores by. And so the 40 would go next, and the 39 would go next, if it was just a duel between those two. And so longer, more complicated actions use more of their shots. So in one round or one phase of combat, like you have so many points of actions and you can each individual discrete action uses, you basically have a budget of actions and you get to allocate them as you see fit. And I like that system. It is slow and feng shui, but feng shui, even though it's a game of blistering hot action, you know, cinematic combat, but like, in order to do that, it has to be slow because you have to describe the location in detail, the characters, their weapons, and also then everyone has to narrate what their characters are doing. And the whole point is to narrate what cool stunts you're doing as you are taking out bad guys and flipping around and saying one-liners and whatnot. And so it's slow.
This is the paradox blistering hot action takes more time to something that feels really fast and involved takes more time than something that where you're just like, oh, we're gonna make one roll for the whole combat, and our team rolled better. Hey, look at that. We won the combat.
Yeah. Yeah. Or yeah, rain, like you won the battle. Good job. Let's move on. Yeah. Yeah, no, it is a paradox. And that's a good point.
I mean, something I did way, way back in the day with Meatbot Massacre, which was not a role-playing game, but a mechs in an arena pounding on each other, was that the more skilled you were, the more dice you got to roll, and different kinds of dice had different effects. So if you really wanted to go first, you would roll multiple initiative dice and add those on. But if you really wanted to run a long distance, you would add, oh, I'm going to do some movement dice. Or if you wanted to do a bunch of different stuff, you had to roll a bunch of different dice. And so that, I think part of its charm was that it decoupled. Okay, how fast do you move from whether you act first or not? And also that a lot of what was going on with do you act first or not was how much are you willing to pay to act first? Will you roll three initiative dice to go first and only have one attack? Or are you willing to say, like, I'll go last, but I'm going to make three attacks last?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you better take me out.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's nice. And I think that would work very well with a movement point system if you allowed people to allocate some of those action point system. Sorry, Sniper calls the movement points. Not that I went upstairs to my spare bedroom and dug out my copy of Sniper Bug Hunter just to catch up on this.
Yeah.
If you allow people to allocate some of their action points into initiative points for where they go, for going first or where they go in the round, I think, that could work really nicely in a really interesting way on a tactical but not too tactical system. And yet I can't think of a game that does something as simple as that. I like the sound of what you're talking about, Greg, but as you say, combat was that game, basically. It was all about combat, and there's loads of dice built in on top of it. Simple, elegant systems. I mean, initiative systems are kind of the ugly stepchild. They're kind of nobody gets excited about initiative systems. Nobody goes, oh, this game's got really cool initiative. Mostly reviewers, because I've been Googling initiative systems quite a lot, mostly reviewers don't talk about it. It's just kind of there.
It's like your lymph nodes, right? Yeah. You know you have lymph nodes, and when something goes wrong with your lymph nodes, it's annoying, but nobody talks about them or is like, oh, you know what I got? I've been working out my lymph nodes.
Mm.
They're really shredded now. I got so much lymph coursing through my nodes.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of, and I think in a lot of designers' minds, and again, thinking back to the paranoia design process, it was slightly, we had the combat system and initiative was slightly kind of, we had the big argument about whether we needed it at all. And it felt slightly tacked on. And I think in a lot of games, it does feel slightly tacked on because designers go, we've got to do something. It doesn't feel properly integrated alongside the rest of the combat system. And I'm very happy for people to come up with counterexamples where it is, it really feels like part and parcel of the whole thing. And it's properly part of the, and your consideration when you go into a game, because I mean, starting with D&D, you do initiative and then you do the combat. It's one and then the other. It's not, you don't think of them as part of the whole.
And, the question is, okay, do you do it one time for the whole combat or do you do it one time for, each combat round? And
one time
how is that different?
Party,
what does
one time for the evening? There are games that, you just roll initiative once for the session. It's you're having a good day.
Wow.
You'll be going first most of the combats this time.
See, that breaks my immersion. There it goes.
I can think of one sort of subset of RPG where initiative would be like a central feature of the system and a highlight of the game mechanics, because it's the whole point. That would be like a Wild West RPG, because the whole point is, who draws first and shoots the other guy, the duel. So the one example I can think of is Aces and Eights from Kinzer and Company, which is Aces and Eights Shattered Frontier. I'm just quoting from an RPG review. The initiative system works without rounds as a count-up that tracks a difference in speeds of a tenth of a second. Even though tenths of a second are modeled, combat flies fast when compared to any other RPG. This is because not every tenth of a second sees a new action resolve. It takes me half a second to draw my pistol, another half a second to point it at the bandit. Nothing needs to be rolled for the first 10 counts. The bandit being a tenth of a second faster perhaps pulls the trigger before mine, resulting in a truly hair-raising to hit roll. And then like they have a very like a shot clock system for like the silhouette of the person you're shooting at. You draw cards, like it's a very the whole point of the system.
This is Shane Ivey loves that game.
Oh yeah, he likes his westerns. So I could see some subsystem. There is also a more recent, probably in the last 10 years of the what is called by some people the handoff initiative system, which is turn-based, but like basically once a player goes, they hand off initiative to another character. And different RPGs do it differently. Like obviously the default would be like players hand it off to other players until any of the bad guys get to go, right? But like maybe there are systems or abilities that allow you to interrupt that, like maybe a meta currency you can spend in order to hijack it.
And what would be super fun is, there are rewards for handing it off to your enemy.
Exactly.
You are not going to get your humiliating foot sweep in unless you give him, or it's like, I'm going to take this action, but that automatically, it's a really cool action, but it automatically hands off initiative to whoever I use it on if they're still standing at the end of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That could be pretty dope.
I like that.
That'd be neat. Yeah. I mean, what it boils down to is it's got to be fun. If a game's the fundamental rule of all games, they've got to be fun. If they're not fun, they're not working as games. And so the initiative has to be interesting and engaging and immersive in all the ways that we're familiar with.
Mm-hmm. And if it invisible.
Or invisible. Yeah. Yeah, no, that's a very good point.
I mean, honestly, I think that's why turn-based D&D style initiative is kept, because it's such a tradition and it's used in so many RPGs that it does kind of become invisible. It's like, all right, everybody roll initiative, give me your number. All right, now. And it's just so rote at this point for so many gamers. Exactly.
And a lot of people would scratch your eyes out if you tried to tell them that, we can do this better, We can have a game where the timing is much more interactive and interesting, and where if you do things right, you will get to act like 5 times in a round, and if you aren't paying attention, you might not get to act at all. Mm-hmm. And people would be like, probably a good 75% would be like, that sucks. What if I don't get to act? I'll lose my spot. But there would be that keen 25% who are like, oh yeah, I've been dreaming about this.
Yeah.
But I mean, just talking about D&D, it's the familiarity. And let's be honest, rolling a die and adding either your speed or a modifier derived
Dex from modifier. Yours,
Dex modifier. And comparing that to what everyone else has got, it's fast, it's simple, it doesn't scream this is unrealistic. There are many worse systems. There could be a lot worse than that.
So,
And the moment as long as you've been playing your character long enough to remember what your modifier is as well, you can do it just without thinking about it. And that's the mark of any good mechanic. You don't have to think about it. It just feels like part of the process.
That or thinking about it is entirely the point, and it's fun. Yeah. And, Rochambeau again.
There is very little tactical in D&D combat.
No. In fact, one system, I think, Cliffside, which we previously reviewed, has a pretty D&D-ish initiative system of, add a stat to a die roll. But, that dovetails into its combat system in the wound system, because if you get to go first at the first round of a combat, if you can do enough damage to an opponent, you can give them a wound penalty, which will impact them before they get to do anything. So you've tagged a person and now you've messed up their physical body so much that they can't shoot you effectively or
Mike Tyson effect. Everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face.
Yes. And while that absolutely sucks in PvP, because it can, you know, it basically means that you can be essentially disabled before you've even got your first shot in.
Like the gunslinger.
In a PvE game where you're playing against monsters and NPCs, it works because who cares about the monsters and the NPCs? They're there to be hit. If you're in a fight with them, that fight was probably going to happen at some point.
I think, you know, just overall initiative systems are best when they are reinforced the thematic elements of the game, you know, and so I think like even very simple systems can work because like I do like the Delta Green initiative system, which is very like it's just your decks, order of decks, highest decks goes first. It's fixed. And so if you're slow, you're slow, and that's it. And you only get one action per round, and defending yourself is an action. So it, you can react before your initiative to dodge, but that's your turn. And so it's a but Delta Green is a, you know, a nihilistic game of cosmic horror. Things suck. You know, it's not it's a horror game.
You are not empowered.
No.
And Feng Shui works because it's like a game of meticulous detail. Like it's the joy is all the detail of how you are able to use your special skills and abilities and weapons in order to very cinematically just, you know, defeat your enemies. And being able to shoot four people in one round, like a brilliantly choreographed fight scene in a John Wick movie, like that's bringing it to life in the mind's eye theater. So yeah, it matters basically. There's no right single right initiative system. It's what your game is about, you know, and hopefully you reinforced it. So,
bespoke will fit better than off the rack.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And just one final point, because your mention of Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon put it in mind. When I think about combat, the kind of combat I would love to emulate in a role-playing game is the sword duel from The Princess Bride on top of the cliff. Or any of the combats from Hero, if you've seen Jet Li's Hero, which is the most beautiful waifu wuxia movie that you will ever see. It's just, it's so good.
Who
fights are
directed that?
Oh, I can't remember his name. He did House of Flying Daggers as well.
Was that the guy who did Judo and To Live and Shanghai Triad?
Let's see here. Yimou Zhang.
Zhang Yimou, there we go. Yes.
Thanks for that.
House of Flying.
And it's extraordinary, but the key word there is those fights are choreographed. They're not generated on the fly in any way. They are scripted pieces of almost ballet. And Greg, you were talking about computer games. Computer games cannot generate that kind of beauty within a combat scene. They can do some fine moments, but they can't string them together to create something of beauty. Role-playing games can't either, and I don't think we should try, because I don't think that's where our strengths are. I think, you know, role-playing games are about the unexpected, the slightly chaotic, things not happening, not turning out the way you're expecting or wanting them to. That's what makes these games interesting and keeps
us wildness.
The wildness. and that can sometimes be as I was expecting to go first and now I'm going second, and that has ruined my entire plan. And now I'm going to have to come up with something on the plan. And that's why initiative systems are important, and we should put more thought into them as designers than often we do.
Yep. Because they force people to take an action that is not their lazy first choice.
Exactly, yes.
Okay.
All right, I appreciate that. Any other final thoughts, Greg?
No, not really. I'm just, you know, I'm trying to think about what would be a really cool initiative system now. And I'm sure that sometime in the next 3 weeks, I will wake up at 3 a.m. thinking, oh, what if we did X?
Well, let me plan in the bag building thing. Cause again, I just think bag building is an underutilized mechanic for role-playing games. Mm-hmm. So
I can really see it. Yeah. I mean, and my thought with bag building is, I want it to be like random and gritty, where it's like, we're not going to sell you a bunch of different stuff to stick in your bag. You're going to bring in an object that means something to your character. So it's like, there's a quarter and a matchbox car And although then you'd be able to feel what it was, wouldn't you?
Mm. Well, if you use different color poker chips, that's sort of like the default for doing a bag building.
Yeah. If you want it to be, but then I just like the idea of reaching in and you're like, oh, hey, I got a die, a matchbox car, and a pill.
Yeah, no, I mean, for a more story game, then that's the fun of it, isn't it? Yeah.
Bizarrely,
I am literally working on a game that uses a similar mechanic, not for initiative, but for a different kind of resolution, not dissimilar to that at all.
Man, imagine if you had no idea what was in the bag.
Yeah. What is this? Is kind of sticky. It's
all things for the bag must be dry. This is the rule.
No sharp objects.
Rule
either.
Zero.
Yeah. No biohazards. Oh, yes.
Excellent. The good news is I got a critical success and decapitated the boss. The bad news is I had to draw an X-Acto knife blade to do it.
Oh, no.
That's pretty cool. I have a final thought. This is something that it may be a dirty word. It was a dirty word for a lot of people when it came up in board games a few years ago. Mm. There aren't many role-playing games doing it. But if we're looking at something that combines the strong points of computers being able to hold all the numbers and dole things out in the correct order and the improvisational stuff that tabletop does really well, what about an app-enhanced role-playing combat system?
Oh, yeah.
I've thought about it. It's certainly been a thought I've had in my pointy little brain.
It's not an RPG, but I mentioned it before. Gloomhaven, which is a cooperative dungeon crawling board game, does have a companion app. I think it was fan made, but I think I can't remember if they officially bought out the fan developers. But it has. We would use it when we played Gloomhaven just for initiative, if nothing else, because everyone would input their stuff, and then like every ability had its own initiative, I believe. So like you could do the cool thing, but it was slow, or you could do the fast thing that wasn't as powerful, and you had to talk to everybody, figure out what you were going to do. And so like I just remember I was the guy on the laptop like entering in everybody's action so we could figure out initiative for the next round.
Is the most Ross thing I've ever heard you say.
To work brilliant, it would kind of need to be network enabled, so everyone's got the app on the phone and everyone's entering that. Okay, this is what I'm going to, kind of in a robo rally kind of way. Mm-hmm. We're back to there. I'm going to do this, and then I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this, and the app goes, okay, you go, and you go, and you fail because the thing that you thought was going to be there has moved, and you fall down a hole.
Rip.
Yeah, I think there's something there, but it's going to need investment and programmers.
It's going to be it's going to cost so much money.
Yeah, this is not going to be a game that you're going to pay $2.95 for on itch, is it?
Yeah. I mean, if you know some friends who are willing to donate a lot of programming time, you know, like.
It comes down to how complicated does it have to be? It doesn't have to be super complicated. It just has to be something that benefits from being calculated faster than people can calculate.
Yeah. You should talk to Caleb about that because he developed an app for a web app for Phase Anatomy, his magical murder or his magical medical mystery melodrama storytelling / RPG where it's all like
Phase Anatomy.
Yeah. So there's a website and you can enter in your stuff and it's not a game that has initiative, but like players do take turns trying to, you know, solve the medical mystery, save the patient.
We've solved initiative. No, we haven't solved initiative. No. In conclusion, the world of initiative is a land of contrasts.
It's a rich tapestry is what it is.
It's a rich Yes, we've identified problems with it and we've thrown out, if not solutions, things that could grow into solutions.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yay us.
Yay.
Good.
We did it.
Good job, team.
Nice work. And if anyone wants in the London area wants a game of Sniper Bug Hunt, I would absolutely be up for some of that. I've never actually played it. Owned it since the late 80s, never played it.
Wow.
I feel a little better about my shelf of shame then. So, All right. Well, thank you all so much for listening. I believe our next episode is going to be a backer curated episode on Planet Mercenary.
Oh.
So that will be interesting.
I'll start reading that thick old book I got.
But I would like to thank one of our backers for the Kickstarter. And that is actually a good friend of mine who I've met, Grant McCarron, who lives in Melbourne, Australia, and is a hot air balloonist. And was kind enough to take me and my partner up in a hot air balloon, which Maddie has skydived. So they were like, okay, yeah, this is fine. And I have not skydived, and I'm not, I don't say I'm terrified of heights. I respect heights. I'm very respectful of them. And I was respecting holding onto the basket quite carefully. But it was a great experience. It was an amazing experience. So thank you so much for backing this Kickstarter, Grant. Hope you're doing well, and I'm sure I'll be talking to you online soon.
That warms my heart.
Yeah. And I would like to thank Sarah Cole, who is a Londoner like myself and who I do know, although we've never been hot air ballooning. Anyone who buys or has bought my latest book, Everybody Wins, launching mid-May in the US and Canada, and mid-March in the US and Canada, mid-May in Australia, will be able to see Sarah's hand in the author's picture at the back. many thanks for backing us as well, Sarah. I probably owe you a drink next time I see you.
Oh, all right. Well, thanks.
And I'll say thank you to all the rest of them. Thanks, everybody else.
You're a diplomat.
All right. We'll talk to you all later. Bye.
All right.
Bye. See you.